In times of fear and doubt, chaos and question, we're the one true source for strength, safety, and certainty. Common men with uncommon passions to protect and serve, defend and preserve our family, our life, and our freedom. Founded on the key principles that we must become present, active, and engaged fathers, committed to lead, learn, and love ourselves and our family unconditionally. Willing and able to take action against the resistance with honor and integrity by creating the daily discipline necessary to build our body, strengthen our minds, and expand our spirit. Committed and dedicated men who forbid the past to define their current reality. I am that man. My name is Luke Kayyem. I am a father of the future. Welcome to the Fathers of the Future podcast. We are in 2021. We are in the future. This is season three, and I am proud to have my brother, Pat Kelleher, PK, in the house. Welcome, my brother.
How you doing, Luke? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, I'm doing fantastic. You know, we talk about this a lot. I invite a lot of strangers into my house, and fuck COVID, all this other bullshit, shaking hands, all of it. Like, this is how we roll. And I never met you before until an hour ago in person, but we got connected because of the social medias. I'm going to tell the story like this. I saw a picture of you on Instagram, Camelback Culture, shout out. I hit Camelback, you know, once a week. You had your son on your shoulders. Yep. And I just hit you up, man. I just did what, you know, what I thought was right. And I said, hey, you look like a father of the future. You know, who are you? I'd love to have you on this podcast. And you replied back. And then we went a little deeper and I said, hey, you know, I've had a couple of pro athletes on here. You're a former pro athlete. Eric Gagne was on the show. And you're like, oh, that's my boy. I played with him.
Yeah, former teammate.
Yep. Yeah. And then we just connected and, you know, you went to Hawaii. I was there before you. You came back and now you're here in my office, in my studio. And, you know, for the listeners, man, it's like, look, the fear is there. We can find fear everywhere. We can find discomfort. We can find reasons to not grow. We can find, you know, bullshit stories to tell why I can't shake your hand and why you can't come into my house.
This is true. But, you know, thankfully, you're not scared. I'm not scared. Mm-hmm. You know, we reeled it in for a hug, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah.
It was the real thing.
It was the real thing, man. I love it. I'm super excited to have you here on the show. As we got to talking in the precast, we have some friends that are similar. We have some alliances. We know some of the same people. You've been here longer than me in the state of Arizona. Let's talk a little bit about your professional baseball career before we get into the fatherhood piece and the business piece. When did you start swinging a bat? How old were you?
Oh, man, I think my whole life, I grew up with a baseball bat in my hand. My grandfather was a former professional baseball player, minor leaguer for the Red Sox, and he kind of engraved baseball into me at an early age. He made it fun. He was kind of a father figure to me, a war hero, and so I grew up with baseball, and, you know, I continued playing because I felt like it was a way to honor him. He actually wasn't able to fulfill his career. He was drafted into the Army in World War II, and he lost the best years of his career serving his country. Nothing to be ashamed of. He was a war hero, and I kind of think that me playing was a great way to honor him, and, you know, I did it to kind of fulfill his dream a little bit.
And so I called you a Southie a little bit in the very beginning here, right? But those were your words. You were born in Boston, grew up there.
I was actually born in Chicago. My family, we moved around a lot when I was a kid. It was Chicago. It was Memphis, Tennessee. It was Boston. It was Phoenix. It was Boston again. But yeah, I found a home in Southie, South Boston, for about the last 20 plus years. It was a place that I call home.
All right. So when you go home, your friends who look like you, but say you don't sound like them.
Yeah, they definitely give me the, hey, what are you doing, PK? You don't look like us. You don't talk like us. what happened to the accent? I'm like, I maybe moved on that I don't, you know, I enunciate my words clear and concisely. That is an issue with people, I guess. I don't have the accent anymore.
Yeah, but you still got it.
Yeah, a little bit. Comes out a little bit sometimes. I try to keep it under wraps, though.
Yeah, so when we were in Hawaii, as you know, there's a local language called Pidgin. And brada, we like talk story, small kind, you know? So when I go home, I turn that up a little bit. When I come back to the States, it's back to normal.
For sure, when I'm back home, it comes out a little bit more.
Yeah. All right, so you start swinging a bat. I saw a video of you on your Facebook and Instagram, which we'll get into at the end if people want to connect with you. But I saw you swinging left-handed, and I saw you talk about Griffey. And if you want to swing like a pro, you should swing like a pro.
Yeah, funny you say that. Ken Griffey Jr., yeah, he was my favorite player growing up. I kind of patterned my game after him. I was a center fielder, left-handed hitter. He was number 24. I continue to be number 24, kind of even to this day, that's my number. But he played the game hard. He kept it fun. He had an awesome swing, and you know, it's a great way to show kids, I think, is I had a coach that told me one time, if you want to hit like a big leaguer, you know, hit like a big leaguer. Mm. And, you know, that to this day, that still rings true. I think I tell kids a lot of the time, hey, who's your favorite player? Watch him, you know, try to hit like him. If you can do it like him, you know, you'd be pretty good. So, yep. You know, there's a lot to that, I think. Kids, you know, they need to look up to someone. You know, if they have someone that they can look up to and say, you know, that's how I need to do it. You know, this guy tells me that's how I need to do it. You know, they can go forward that way and, you know, try to get better. You know, it's a good way to get better for kids.
So I watched that video and I thought, you know, I wasn't listening, but I just watched it and I thought, oh, he's showing kids how Griffey hits. And then I went back in and I said, no, that's how he swings. And he learned that from Griffey. Natural, that elbow movement, you know, a little less subtle than Sheffield, right?
And from
the other side.
Yeah.
But man, that was really cool. I want to share another thing with you that I saw on your social media. It was Sheffield, whose son you coached at a very young age?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Gary Sheffield Jr., a great kid. He was my first. I came into World of Baseball. I think he might have been 6 or 7 with his mom, and they said, yeah, this is Gary Jr. I said, wow, Gary Sheffield, you know, he was with the Dodgers when I was with the Dodgers, obviously a superstar. I wasn't, but I looked up to him. He was an outfielder. Guy had lightning quick hands, and I really, when I started World of Baseball, I didn't have a lot of kids that followed me. I was young. I think I was 23 years old when I started Arizona World of Baseball, but Gary came in. He was my first kid that I did a lesson with, and he continued to come back and he got better, and cool that to this day I kind of keep in touch with him. He's an awesome kid, and I'm, you know, proud of what he's doing today. He's doing well for himself, and that's kind of another cool thing about my job, is that, you know, these kids grow up and I get to see them succeed in life, and that's that's a big win for me.
Yeah, it's you get to live a little bit of what you didn't have when you were a kid growing up. You know, You asked me kind of what this podcast is about, right? And I was like, look, I grew up without a dad. I had no positive male role model, no father figure. And so I had to figure some shit out. And it was very, very bumpy for a long time. And then I became a dad and had no manual, no handbook, no clue how to do it, no mentor to look up to, nobody to call to say, hey, dad, hey, man, I'm having this challenge with my teenage son. Can you help me out with that? And so that's how this thing evolved. And now it's become my mission. And now I've got men like you on the show who's doing the same thing, just slightly different in a different way. So you started swinging a bat left-handed at a young age. And then where did you go from there? Was it Little League, high school, pros? Talk to us about that linear timeline of your baseball career.
When I was a kid, compared to today, it's crazy because I see it now because I'm a youth baseball coach, been in it for 21 years. These kids nowadays, they play hundreds of games. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I was in the Northeast. Obviously, we didn't have great weather. But baseball season for me meant, you know, Little League, you know, like 10 or 12 games, or some years, you know, maybe didn't even play.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, for me, it was, you know, go to the park with my grandfather. Hit balls, you know, learn how to get better, like spend time with him. That's what really it meant to me. Getting better at baseball meant I got to spend time with him, which was awesome.
And play multiple sports, right?
Yep. Football was, you know, my main sport because you could play it longer back east. It was more of a football town where I grew up in. And
what position did you play?
I was wide receiver, kick returner, safety. I was
You're fast.
Yeah, I was fast. I could run a little bit. Kind of was my thing.
And then center field in baseball?
Center field in baseball, yep.
Where did you hit position?
In the order, I was always a leadoff hitter. I hit first because I was fast. I could get down the line pretty good. I bunted a lot. You know, nowadays guys swing for home runs, and myself, obviously, now I'm trying to swing out of my butt at World of Baseball to show the kids, you know, what it's like. I don't practice bunting, but that's the way I got on base, and I stole a lot of bases in high school. So that's actually what got me drafted, I believe, was my running ability.
Yeah. So you're playing Little League back east, and then you make the move out west.
Yeah. My dad got a job out here in Arizona. We were in Boston, and, you know, I had the option. I could have stayed in Boston, but for me, I think I needed a move for that time in my life. I was at a place where I didn't have a lot of good things going on.
That's part of the neighborhood, part of the community.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was surroundings. Maybe it was community. Maybe it was just myself. But I needed a change, and it was a good thing. I moved out here. It didn't really work out for my family. They ended up moving back. But I stayed here, and, you know, I ended up getting drafted, and I've been out here ever since.
So you did a year at Shap?
Yeah, a year at Chaparral High School. Yeah.
Which, by the way, I got to mention this with all the dads out there. So I have a 14-year-old turning 15 this year, going to be a freshman. And so I say this with pride, and I even said this to my son, because for the past 3 months, we've been working on where he's going to high school. Now, Notre Dame, which you saw the beautiful baseball field, is across the street.
Good program, too.
Private school, prep school, costs money, but a higher, better, greater education, plus big fish, small pond. He said no. He's been fighting. He wants to go to Shap. So, okay, I'm not going to fight it any longer when I see another dad who went to Shap. And, you know, it's a good program, but there's 2,800 kids at the school. There's 80 kids on the freshman football team. But to hear from someone, hey, look, I went to Shap, but I also got drafted out of Shap, out of high school. How many years did you do in high school? Did you do all four before you got drafted, or did you leave junior year?
I actually did 4.5 years. I graduated early. I didn't get good grades in Boston my freshman year. I actually would have been ineligible as a freshman at ASU, and I would have not been able to been in the draft. So what I did, I graduated early, got a GED, and took my scholarship to ASU.
Sweet.
Didn't end up working out at ASU, but the Dodgers still ended up drafting me without me playing my senior year. So ended up working out for me, ended up signing. And
now, can you share what that contract value was back then?
Not a lot. Not a lot. I wish I got more, you know, but it, you know, wasn't a lot.
As a professional athlete, when you see someone sign a, you know, $400-500 million deal, is it believable?
Oh, for me now, because guys that come into my facility, it's like, wait a second, you just signed a deal for $10 million? It's like, wow, that's amazing to me to get that kind of money to play baseball. But these kids and guys, I put in a lot of work. There's a certain few small percentages planet that can do that. So more power to you if you can. And kids that I see that come in that end up getting millions of dollars, it's pretty awesome, but at the same time, I don't like all the kids to think that that's what they're going to be. A lot of the times, the best thing to do would be to go to the best school to get the best education that you can. A lot of the times, not everyone's going to be a professional athlete, but at the same time, don't short sell yourself. You know, try to be at the best program. Yeah. You know, if you're serious about sports, you know, you want to be at the best place. So it's a double-edged sword when I think about it, really. And when it comes to your son at Chaparral or Notre Dame, it's like, yeah, do you go to get the good education, or do you want to be in the program with the best athletes? You know, it's, what do you want to do? It's a tough choice.
Yeah, it's tough. And you got, you know, one teenager and one about to be a teenager. I got one fully teenage mode and one who's about to be. And so it's a completely different game. I got to, you know, compare it to, like, say, your baseball career in the beginning and at the end. Having teenagers is a fucking nightmare 99% of the time. And then I stop and pause, and my wife, who I dated in high school, who we, you know, started, you know, playing around when we were 14, 15, we think, oh, man, they're fine. If you think about what we did at 14 and 15, right? And this is without the social media bullshit and all that other stuff. You know what? They're fine. They're fine, right? But we're like, ah, oh, man, these mother, they're challenging, but they're not going to be anything like you and I were in our 15s to 25s.
No, I can't even imagine. The kids, they're good kids, really, nowadays. They aren't exposed to, I don't know, as much, I think. I mean, they might be exposed to more, actually, with the phones and all that stuff, but, you know, my daughter's innocent, but like you said, teenagers, it's crazy. Like, it's not even cool for me to, like, hang out with my kid anymore, walk in the mall. She doesn't want to, you know, be seen with me, all that stuff. It's like that last year, you know, we were holding hands at the mall and you were playing with Barbies and now you won't go to the mall with me. What's, you know, what's the deal? Yeah. So it's like, it's tough having a teenager, but it's, you know, it's cool at the same time. It's a new experience.
So. Yeah. It's a new experience for sure. All right. So you get drafted by the Dodgers. You're living in LA. You're in the limelight.
Oh, I was living here, actually, but I got invited to winter workouts most of the year, so I would spend a lot of time in Los Angeles, yeah.
Did you get sucked into the vortex or the matrix of being in La La Land? With?
I was a kid, you know, I was drafted by the Dodgers. I thought I was pretty cool out there, and it was, if I had a chance to go with, like, some of the big league guys, I took it, and it was a good time. I was a kid. So, I took advantage of that life a little bit, but at all times when it was time to go for me, I was locked into training, you know, when it was time for me to perform or be on the field, you know, I was always ready to go.
So Griffey's your favorite player growing up. When you get into the league, who are you looking up to that's around you?
As soon as I got to the Dodgers, as soon as I looked around, there's major leaguers all over the place. Mike Piazza, Eric Karros. Mike Piazza was a gigantic human being. And I remember, you know, I was just a 180-pound, 6 foot, 180-pound center field skinny kid, you know, walking around these gigantic men. Mike Piazza was a huge man. I'm like, I better hit the weight room. Like, these guys are huge. That was my first, you know, introduction to pro baseball. I really was like, I got to mix in some protein or, you know, maybe some peanut butter sandwiches, something. These guys are big.
And what about on other teams? Did you have somebody that you just loved?
I mean, at that time, Griffey was still in the league. I was always looked up to him. Barry Bonds was the man, left-handed hitter. He was Arizona State guy. So always I kind of, you know, followed the good left-handed hitting outfielders. That's kind of what I did. So Bonds, Griffey, you know, those are my guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what did your career, where'd you end up going? How many years were you in it?
I got drafted in 1996. My last year of spring training was 2003. During that span, I might have played 200 something games. I was injured more than I was on the field, actually. So I was in pro baseball for a while, but not on the field for most of it. Yeah.
What made you have the knowledge at a young age to start a business in baseball? When you talk about, you know, the world of baseball being around for 20 years.
I think that, like I just said, that I was injured so much. I spent a lot of time in the training room or like in the cage because I wasn't, healthy enough to get on the field. So I spent a lot of time with these coaches, like one-on-one in a batting cage or whether it's in the weight room. Or I'm not on the field. I'm not in the stadium. I'm not with the fans. So I ended up learning a lot of baseball, a lot of hitting from these great hitting coaches that I had with the Dodgers and with the Angels as well. So I kind of think I carried that over, and I thought to myself, hey, I think I could maybe do like what they do. At a young age, at 22, 23, I had a coach that was actually he was Ken Griffey Jr.'s hitting coach in the minor leagues, Steve Murray, who was a former ASU Sun Devil. He hit between Odubey McDowell and Barry Bonds. He was kind of the scout that kind of found me, and he started teaching me hitting. And so I listened to whatever he said because, shit, he coached Ken Griffey Jr. I'm like, whatever you say, dude, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of listened to him and, you know, being hurt and listening to these great coaches one-on-one, I kind of like found my own style of hitting, I would say, and I could pass it on to kids.
specifically the left-handers.
Yeah.
Because there's something special about left-handed baseball players, right?
Like, for sure. Lefty hitters are, you know, they got sweet swing. And for me being fast, I'm closer to first base, so I can get there a little quicker.
Yeah. So right now, we live in, I want to say, I don't know if I can say it, you know better or not, the baseball mecca of the country when it comes to year-round baseball.
Yeah, I mean, California, Arizona, Texas, there are some, Florida, there are some great towns. Arizona has picked it up, though, big time in the last 15 years. As I've seen, as this town's grown, you know, a lot of young people moved here, and with that became a lot of youth baseball, which really helped my business enormously when we opened. It's kind of died down a little bit, and with COVID, it's kind of crushed us, but this town is a baseball town for sure. And you get a lot of California people that come here and a lot of people from Texas. So if you get people from the North, they come here, they want to play baseball. Yeah. So everyone that gets here, it's kind of the, you know, the place for baseball. We can play it year round. Summer, it's a little hot.
Yeah. But you're indoors at your training facility.
Yeah, we're indoors. You know, we run summer camp with air conditioning, beat the heat, we call it. Kids have a good time. When we started summer camp, it was more of a hitting camp, and we wanted to teach hitting and bunting and baseball skills. And over time, honestly, in the last 10 years, the decline in kids' shape, like as a whole with phones and technology, kids have gotten in horrible shape. And the condition that they're in as a whole, as I've seen, just caused me to say, you know what, these summer campers, we don't need to teach these kids hitting. We need to just get them fucking moving around. Mm. These kids need to fucking get in shape. It was bad, like starting to see, I don't want to body shame anyone, but our kids, our youth, they don't fucking look good like they looked 10, 15 years ago. I mean, it has to do with phones or video games, whatever it is. So I decided to change summer camp up. Now it's dodgeball. It's relay races. It's, you know, whatever we can get the kids to move around and get them active. And we try to make it fun. And, you know, we got away from doing baseball in the summer. And now we're just a place where kids go and, you know, they have fun for 3 or 4 hours. Parents drop them off. They eat pizza. I got great young instructors that go and help. It's pretty cool.
All right. So we're going to get into what we call shameless self-promotion right now. World of Baseball, Tempe, Arizona. What's the website?
We're aswab.com. Yes, we're Elliot McClintock down in Tempe. We are moving. We're going to add a second location at Ray and Rural Road in March. So we'll be coming to Chandler, Tempe and Chandler.
Beautiful. What do we know about spring training? Are they coming?
We pushed it back. I think we got pushed back a month. From what I hear, don't quote me on it, I guess, but that AAA and the big leagues come in first, and then they're going to bring the minor leaguers in. But
fans?
I don't think so as of yet, which I don't understand if that's the case, because we had 15,000 at the World Series. I was there. I feel like college football has fans. Like the SEC, I tune into that. There's people at those games.
Yeah.
We're out here in the sun in Arizona, and like it's time, I think. You know, we got to get back to people. Got to get back to work in Arizona around here. I'm sorry, like that means a lot to this town. The businesses, the hotels.
Yeah,
we need spring training to be on. So
yeah, when that rumor started that they were going to take the entire league and bring it here,
I was so excited. Yeah, I was like, this is going to be great for me.
Yeah,
because guys are going to need a place to hit, and you know, it'll bring a lot of big leaguers down to my work and. I get to go to a lot of games. I get to go watch all my guys that come in and trained or worked with me as kids that are up there. That, you know, that's what one of my greatest paychecks is, watching those guys or tuning into the TV and I go, hey, that kid hitting cage number 4 in 2007.
Yeah,
and that's awesome, that part. And if they were in town, I get to go watch them at the, you know, whatever.
So place. I'm looking at you. And I'm like, dude, he's a couple years older than me, right? 2 years, 44, 42. He's, you know, he's lean, he's jacked, he's ripped. I'm like, oh man, this guy, you know, he trains. I want to talk about what you just mentioned about these kids being out of shape. I've been in the fitness business for over 20 years, had none of this knowledge myself growing up, you know, fatherless, no male, no coach, nobody besides the ones that the high school gave me, right? So very limited to my knowledge. So I did not strength train. I did not eat appropriately for sport. And so as I had my own son, who we started playing baseball at a very young age, I read a book, and I'm sharing this with not only you, but the listeners, called Any Given Monday, that talks about how this surgeon would see 100 different families on a Monday because of a Tommy John, ACL, MCL, all these different injuries, right? Something happened over the weekend, and little Johnny now goes to the doctor on Monday to see this ortho surgeon. And so in the book, I went a little bit deeper and I started to research, because I have a son who's playing 10 months of baseball. The kid literally had played more baseball games in 1 year at 11 than I played in high school. And I was looking at it, so I had to do my research, and I saw an article, something that came out by Smoltz, and he said that we're seeing more Tommy John surgery, more injuries in baseball now than ever before. And these are the three reasons why. Number one, lack of physical fitness, strength, and conditioning. Number two, corn syrup, aka poor diet, right? Corn syrup is in everything from Powerade to Coca-Cola to all these different things, and it stops the calcium from growing. We want good calcium in the bones for strength. And then number three, overthrowing.
Overuse. Yep.
And so
absolutely.
Everyone wants to blame it on the throwing piece, right? We got to have a pitch count, all this shit, but you're letting little Tommy drink freaking corn syrup drinks in between games.
The diet aspect is really an issue, but the bigger issue is the overuse. As an adult, as a grown man, we can play 162 games a year. We can play that many, and most of us can play 130. Injury happens on a day-to-day grind. Small injuries, it's baseball, it's not a contact sport, but it's an everyday sport where injuries can build up. And as a grown man, you can play 160 games. These kids nowadays are playing over 200 games, some of them 150. Like, to even think that a kid could play as many games as a grown adult, in my mind, it's an uninformed parent. I don't want to say bad parenting. I'd say it's just uninformed, because either the kid is going to get injured, he's going to get hurt, or he's going to quit.
Mm.
It's too many. It's too much. It's too many games. I've seen it happen for 21 years. It's a real issue. And yeah, the number, I think 80% of all Tommy John surgeries performed today are on youth baseball players. I'm really good friends with Tommy John Jr., Dr. Tommy John. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this a lot. The overuse in youth sports today, whether it's any sport, kids specializing in sports, that's really the detriment. If a kid is playing 170, 180 youth baseball games a year, how's he playing another sport? You know, how's he have time for that? He doesn't. You know, in my world, my kid, he plays 15, 20, 30 games a year, and people are like, he's way behind.
Mm.
Like, you know, we'll worry about that when he gets to high school, and
yeah.
I think that we'll be fine. I didn't start really playing competitive baseball till I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I turned out all right. Kinda, a little bit, but it goes without saying that these kids, you know, are playing too many games, and that's the reason that they're checking in for Tommy John surgery. Mm-hmm. And there's another reason for Tommy John surgery that they're having that's not said, is that these kids come back throwing 3 or 4 miles an hour harder. Mm. So some parents are having their kids get cut so they can throw harder.
That's
a small percentage too.
That sounds as ignorant to me as these eighth graders being held back that are 15-year-olds to play football.
Yep.
And my son came to me and said, "Hey, look at these two kids that I'm training with. Look how tall they are." My son is small in comparison to everyone else. And so he's like, "I want to stay back." I'm like, "You're fucking crazy. You think we can pitch this to your mom? That you stay back a year. So now you're going to be a 16-year-old freshman? You're crazy." He hasn't grown yet, but we're somewhat normal in our sense of, like, we don't have pipe dreams of professional athletes, right? We want some high school athletes. And hey, look, when we get there, we can look at what happens next. You know, is college an option? D1, D2, you know, D3. Great. But these parents who are putting their kids into crazy seasons, crazy surgeries, crazy all of it.
Crazy training regimens. Yeah. Like at an early age, I can see these kids are doing like squats, cleaning jerks. I'm like, how old is that kid? And 12, 11? I'm like, come on.
I'm guilty of that. At our CrossFit gym, we were teaching kids all that shit. I'm guilty of that.
Well, you are a professional and like, you know what you're doing. So under your watchful eye, I would be a little bit, I'd be all right with, but like some of the people that are out there that are, you know, they don't have any background in anything and they're, you know, making kids throw around all this huge amounts of weight and just a lot of kids getting hurt. So
we played against a team from Mexico about 2-3 years ago, and I won't mention the club team. We're no longer doing club baseball because it got insane. Not only did the competition got insane, but the fun was gone.
Right.
And so I didn't want to burn my boy out, which he ended up getting burned out because we put a helmet on him. And as soon as he put the helmet on, he was like, you think I want to go throw baseball with Johnny who can't even catch the ball?
Right.
You're crazy. So we've been balancing that, but we played against this team from Mexico. And this kid, I remember, you know, his name was Panda because the kid was like 145 pounds at 10, 11. He pitched both games that we played, all seven innings. Now, he was a stud, but what's the...
Was there a pitch count in this league? You can throw as many innings as you want. Yeah, who cares about that kid's arm?
Right.
Come on.
It's not sustainable.
No.
Right?
And yeah, there's some of these coaches, it's like, are you serious that a kid just came in and said he had a 160 pitch complete game? I had a dad come in and say, hey, my son, he threw a 180 pitch complete game. I'm like, you want to go outside and talk about that, Dad? I'm like, you're going to hurt the kid. He's going to get injured. His arm's going to fall off. You're going to be the guy in surgery, you know, getting your kid Tommy John. That's nothing to be proud of.
No. I heard this at a young age, being a part of our community's Little League team. You know, we had a great coach still to this day. Shout out to Kevin Egan. You know, he was my son's Little League coach for 4 or 5 years. And he would show the statistics to the dads at the beginning of the season. These are the statistics of Little League baseball players. These are the statistics of those who go pro. Stop thinking that your six-year-old is going pro. Not later, now. Who cares how many champions? And that's why we left club. These coaches were chasing rings.
Unbelievable, yep.
So you see this all the time. Mm-hmm.
We have a bunch of the rings. And for a while, we'd take different rings or different, and we put them in our toilet stalls.
Get rid of
urinals.
Them. Yeah.
It's just they're meaningless. And they're, like you said, there's people that are playing for these plastic rings, and it's a everybody gets a trophy kind of thing. And they're giving rings out like, you know, to get a ring for me, it means you won a state championship or you won a national championship or you won a league championship, the minor leagues, or you won a major league, you know, ring, you know, you weren't a fucking ring as a kid.
Yeah.
It's a 8-year-old, you got 25 rings in your closet. It's like, come on, dude.
We've been there,
sorry,
man.
Sorry.
That's good. All right. Next thing I'd like to talk about. A number. Number 42.
Yeah. It's a great number. You know, when you think back in the history of time, we get Jackie Robinson, of course, but the connection, I think, to me was Pat Tillman was number 42 at Arizona State. Friend of mine, way back in the day, we had some mutual friends that we ended up getting hooked up when he was at ASU. And then his where he grew up in California in Leland, they had Hartke World of Baseball. Him and Kevin, his brother, actually was drafted by the Indians. Good baseball player. Played at ASU, too. They had Hartke World of Baseball. We are Arizona World of Baseball. And we patterned our facility after the Hartke facility in Campbell, San Jose, California. Pat Tillman was a regular there. They had his jersey on the wall. And that's when he came out to Arizona State, I kind of got hooked up, mutual friends. One of my friends was friends with Zach Walls. They lived together, became friends. Rest is history. He was a great guy.
Now, years later, after, I'm going to say our loss, because I remember sitting there watching the September 11th attacks, and, you know, had I had more balls back then, I might have done something like what Pat did, and I did not. And I don't know if I can sit here with you and say I regret it, because, you know, things kind of worked out for me. But when you look at that, and you look at, he saw the same thing I saw. He saw the same thing you saw.
Yeah.
And so instead of going, fuck, that's crazy, that's terrible, and going back, he said, fuck that. And he said, I'm going to go do something about it.
There's a lot of that that, you know, I take with me at the time. You know, he was NFL stud, you know, like
$6 million.
Yeah. Like, he was well known. He was doing really good. I was minor league baseball player, but in my life, my grandfather lost the best years of his career, to the war. That hit home with me when he would talk about it, and he would say, things like, you know, I haven't really done anything to defend this country when I think back to, you know, what my grandfather has done back in the day. And that's, you know, that hit home with me. Same thing, you know, when the whole thing happened, 9/11, you know, I felt a part of me, I wanted to go, you know, but, you know, at the time I'm a minor leaguer, and, you know, I didn't have the balls that Pat Tillman had. Right. I wasn't making that kind of move. But, you know, more power to that guy for doing it. Like, what a fucking stud. And, you know, for me, for my grandfather, you know, missing that time in his baseball career, and then me knowing Pat a little bit, and then him going over there and, you know, doing that because his brother was over there, and, you know, yeah, just didn't like what happened at 9/11. That really hit home with me. And to this day, you know, I pay tribute to him. We do the 42 hats, and during the race every year, we're one of the major sponsors, and I think it's awesome what he did. Gave up his career for something that he believed in. It goes to show that, you know, when you believe in something that's, you know, bigger than yourself, you could, and you sacrifice for it, there's something to that, and, you know, people should respect that, and he should be remembered forever, you know.
Yeah. I got a lot of dead people's autographs. I got a lot of dead people tatted on me. And so I can see you got some ink on you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got Muhammad Ali over here. I got Pat downstairs autographed jersey that I got. And it's one of those things that when I see it, it's in my wife's office. It just reminds me, like, damn, man, you know, you got another chance today to do something, you know. What would Pat do if he had another chance, if he had another day? Would he leave, you know, with his daughter pissed off at him in the morning, like mine was this morning? Or would he do something about it? You know, would he let something sit, like what we just saw on Wednesday here in our nation's capital? Or would he speak up? Would he say something about it? And so he, in my mind, is not just an American hero, but I look at him as a hero of our lifetime. Of somebody who, you know, man, there's not a lot of guys out there like that. I guarantee you, if you took every professional athlete in every sport, you might get a few crazy ass MMA guys. You definitely get a few baseball players, but for the most part, you know, not a single one of these guys would give up anything to go and do what he did.
No, I think you're right about that 100%. And I think that the main thing that I kind of take from him was his passion. He had passion for life, and that was kind of the big thing he lives by, was, you know, passion ignites the soul. You know, I think that if you start every day with passion, like you take that into your day, you want to be passionate about whatever you're going to do, like make it matter to you. You know, if you're doing something, you know, believe inside that it's something that you wholeheartedly believe in and you want to do it, make it matter so much, like him, like this country. It mattered to him, and freedom. Yeah. It mattered so much that he was like, I'm not going to sit here and watch this. I'm going to go handle some business with my brother.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's heavy. So we ask a question at the end of every one of these episodes. And since we're talking about Pat and his legacy, you know, you have a legacy. And one day, at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you're going to leave behind everything that you've done. Well, like Pat, you're doing something pretty fucking wild out there, right? You're leaving a part of you behind for the Concussion Foundation. Just give us a brief on that.
Yeah. I retired from baseball partly due to concussions. I was in a really bad car accident with the Dodgers. I was on the freeway during winter workouts, and I ended up going through a passenger window of a Corvette. I went back to spring training that year. I really wasn't the same. Didn't feel like myself. Ended up, the Dodgers switched up, the organization changed hands to Fox bought them out. The trainers all changed and brought new guys in. I got released. I didn't feel like myself at all still. I had headaches, nausea. I wasn't having a good time remembering things. The Angels ended up picking me up anyways, and I went to, they sent me to Boise, Idaho, and I crashed into the wall, like 12 games in or something, and I broke my arm really bad, and I got another really bad concussion. And nowadays you'll find out that you're not really supposed to have two really bad concussions in that short a period of time. And
This is pre-Burroughs Institute. Yeah. This is pre-concussion protocol, all that shit. None of that existed.
Right. So right. I think in 2007, I got approached because people knew that, you know, I had a hard time with that. And a lot of the times they asked you, what was wrong? I said, they said I had vertigo. You know, and whatever it was, in my life at the time, the early 2000s, everything was like foggy for a long time. I had headaches. Couldn't sleep. And then I got approached by the Concussion Legacy in Boston, which is Dr. Robert Cantu, who's the head concussion doctor in the NFL. And they asked me if I'd donate my brain to them to study because I had had some CAT scans and some MRIs done on my brain, and they found some spots.
What was your response? Was it like... when they say, hey man, we want you to donate your brain, you know, I carry a card in my wallet that says,
I'm like, we want my brain? There ain't fucking a lot in there, dude. Like, it's not, there's not much up there. No, honestly, I think that, you know, I'll be gone, you know, and if they can use it to help, you know, other people, so be it. And, you know, if we can help another baseball player, maybe, because there's not a lot of us baseball players that have donated their brains to Concussion Legacy. That we got boxers, we got Mickey Ward. There's a lot of NFL players, obviously.
I think Seau's family donated the brain.
Yep,
right?
He's there.
Yeah,
yeah. It's there. It's a great company that you know looks after people with concussions. And actually with Spalding Institute in Boston too, they've helped me out a lot too. I've also done stem cell therapy, and like I said, in the early 2000s, I really wasn't able to hit or do the things that I could do when I got drafted. And with help from all these places, now I take medicine for dementia and Alzheimer's, which, you know, it's not a great thing. I'm not proud of it, but it helps.
PK.
Yeah, but I couldn't hit for a while.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the things physically that I used to do.
Yeah.
And I got all this help a couple years ago, 2017, and you know, just things started to come back. And like you see, people see me hitting on my video. They're like, why are you hitting so much? I'm like, well, because I can now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel so much better, and I can get in there with kids, and I can still swing it. And like, that is part of me. Baseball is part of me, so I feel like that. The fact that I can get in there and do it now, I probably fucking do it too much. Like, I probably am in there showing off a little bit, but for a long time I couldn't do it. And then with the help of these doctors, I got it back to where I can do it now again. And it, you know, it makes me feel good. It's a good part of me is baseball and hitting. And, you know, I'm a hitting coach. So
yeah.
For a while I was like, hey, you should do it like this. And I couldn't even show them how to do it. And now it's like, I can show you how to do it, like, honestly, like I used to, maybe a little better.
Yeah. PK, I want to thank you, but more importantly, I want to honor you, man, to come on this show again, to meet with another stranger, and then to share that story, you know, about what you've gone through as an athlete, and then to say, hey, look, one day when I'm gone, man, you know, I'm not going to live forever. I'm going to do something, and I'm going to pay it forward. Thank you. I truly appreciate you, man.
Right on, bro. Thank you.
From the bottom of my heart, man. Yeah, man. Thank you for being here. How can we find you for the listeners out there? Social media, talk to us.
PK24PK on Instagram. We are ASWOB101 on Instagram for Arizona World of Baseball. We kind of just started that. I'm an open book. Yeah. Follow me.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on.
But appreciate you having me on. Yeah. It was cool, man. Yeah. Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you guys for being here today. We truly appreciate you for listening. There's a lot of content out there. There's a lot of podcasts out there, but this is that one place, that one space that talks about the real of growing up with or without a father and becoming a father, becoming a man, and the journey and the challenges that we all face every stage of the way. If you got something out of this show, all we ask in return is that you pay it forward. You share this, you send it to a friend, text, email, you put it on your social media, and you give us a 5-star rating review on Apple iTunes. To my man PK, my brother, have a beautiful year. Everybody out there, give love a chance. Stop with the hate. Don't buy into the bullshit. Don't listen to the noise. Make your own decisions. Turn off your phone and have a real conversation with real human beings. My name is Luke Kayyem. I'm the founder of the Fathers of the Future movement, and I appreciate each and every one of you. Peace.